Hello, and this is Pastor Harley Wheeler with Broadway United Methodist Church, welcoming you to this podcast number 12, looking in the book of Ecclesiastes. This time we are looking at Ecclesiastes chapter 9. The first verses read like this: "But all this I laid to heart, examining it all, how the righteous and the wise and their deeds are in the hand of God. Whether it is love or hate, man does not know. Both are before him. It is the same for all, since the same event happens to the righteous and the wicked, to the good and the evil, to the clean and the unclean, to him who sacrifices and him who does not sacrifice. As the good one is, so is the sinner, and he who swears is as he who shuns an oath. This is an evil in all that is done under the sun, that the same event happens to all. Also, the hearts of the children of men are full of evil, and madness is in their hearts while they live. And after that, they go to the dead." Now, of course, these are not the most chipper and uplifting verses in the scriptures. Again, you won't find, all the hearts of the children of men are full of evil and madness in their hearts while they live, and after that, they go to the dead. That is not going to be on a refrigerator magnet anytime soon. And so what is the author driving at? Now, it's important to say that he is dealing with the end of life, and also with the fact, as he will unpack in this chapter, of the circumstances and the outcome of all our doing. If, like most of us, 2020 was a difficult and a tough year, you'll find that almost anything one tried to do met with frustration. It met with things that stymied you and your best aims. It's been a grief that many things that were life-affirming, positive, and good in the church and in the community just were unable to happen. We lost a lot. People lost precious time with elderly relatives. At the same time, they were losing precious time with young children and grandchildren. And so, The writer here, Solomon, would be saying, "Look, we find this to be difficult and grievous. That it didn't seem to matter whether you were good or whether you were a sinner." And then he takes the list and goes on: the clean and the unclean, the one who goes down to the temple and gives sacrifices, and the one who never bothers. The same event answers to them all. In fact, he says, you know, all these things are before God, and then he uses this curious construction where he says, "Well, you know, is it love or hate?" Meaning, as far as I can tell, love or hate from God. You know, good things from His hand, blessings and kindnesses, or will it be afflictions and trouble? And one just does not know. It is good to remember that for the Christian, we do not depend on the outcome of things. We know the eternal outcome. And Solomon, though he is careful to say, "Well, you know, everybody goes down the dead. Life ends when, you know, as it does for everyone, each one, sinner and not sinner, the weak and the strong, the wise and the foolish, all go down to the same place." He talks about the end of life. He is careful in this whole chapter. Not to say anything about the life after this. A very wise man, you know, writing this, and a philosopher, has to know about our conception of the afterlife. I have heard it said in Bible study. In fact, I've heard it just upheld as it has to be a total piece of truth that the ancients had no concept of an afterlife, and they would point to passages like this. It says, "Well, they go down to the dead," and then later on he's going to say, "Hey, living dog's better than a dead lion. What do the dead know?" He is talking about the things as they are on earth. It can be said that, you know, somebody has a lot of plans. A tyrant might threaten to conquer a city, but if he dies, what comes of his threats? What possible outcome can that be? The great and the weak all go down to the grave. But this chapter does not postulate anything about the life that is after. But if you read, it actually is going on to say there is a difference. You know, the great sinner is not happier, is not better off, and certainly stands under the judgment of God, as do the people who are reverent and attentive to God. He doesn't lift up the evildoer and the person who is wicked, uncaring, unfeeling, and unloving, and say, well, they are just as good. But he is saying that you cannot look at the consequences of an effort. You can't look at the results and say that God always makes a difference between the works of the holy and righteous and the works of people who pay no mind to him. We all sometimes will find frustration. We will have our best efforts come to nothing. What we understand is that Christians have a relationship with God which goes beyond the idea of will we have worldly success. In fact, we don't, as G.K. Chesterton put it, harden our hearts with hope, saying, well, I'll serve God because everything I do in this life right now, which is all my purview, we know about the life after, but we do not know when it begins. We don't actually know all it contains, except that it is in that place that is in before the face of God, wherein is joy and bliss. But we don't have our hands upon that. And Solomon is working with what we actually see, experience, and know in our daily lives. And so he is saying that this is that vain thing, that doesn't seem to matter if you're doing very well. It doesn't seem to matter if you're listening to God or if you're not. It doesn't even seem to matter if you're a lunatic or not and have madness in your heart or not. Things will happen to you, and you cannot measure by the outcome of things that this one has the approval of God and this one does not. What is said also by G.K. Chesterton, that the people of God will not get tired of losing faster than the unholy people will get tired of winning. For the Christian, we do understand that we are commanded by God to do and to struggle. When there are wrongs, we must strive to right them. When there's community to build and people to provide for, we will do that. When there are freedoms to advocate for, we will do so. But we may not succeed. It's possible that we may meet with failure. It's possible that we may meet with worldly force that we have not been given the ability to overcome. It is important for the Christian to understand, well, what will we do if the circumstances that God sends us are adverse? Will we continue to keep faithfulness? Well, by the grace of God, we most certainly will, because we will ultimately prevail in the next life, if not in this. Now, that may seem also like one is saying, well, tech with this life, we don't care. It doesn't really matter if we succeed or not. It doesn't matter in the sense that God will still love us. God will still preserve us. We will be raised from the grave, and we will receive strength and source from God, as we have the earnest of that with His Holy Spirit right now. But we deeply care about this world, and if we look within ourselves, you know, and Solomon's great frustration. You know, that he's laid the start, he's examined it, and he lays out the difficulties of this life, pointing out how truly we wish it was different, and we wish that we saw both peace and harmony, justice and love prevail. We will labor for these things, and we will continue, but we do understand that we will not always win. So then going on, he doesn't get more optimistic, let us say, yet. He says, but he who has joined with all the living, this is at verse 4, has hope, for a living dog is better than a dead lion. For the living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing, and they have no more regard, for the memory of them is forgotten. Their love and their hate and their envy have already perished, and forever they have no more share in all that is done, and notice this word, under the sun. It has been noted by commentators that Solomon is talking about what is going on earth. As we proceed through this this form of life on earth, we do understand that the love and the hate and the envy, and particularly sometimes as a comfort, the hate and the envy of those that perish, perishes with them. And in fact, very few people who have passed away have ever been able to have a lasting influence on the world after them, and none of them have had a lasting influence of any great extent at all. It lasts just very few years. Solomon seems to quote what we would call a proverb, you know, a living dog is better than a dead lion, but he goes to expand. You know, he is joined with the living, has hope. We may see the work of God come alongside us so that we see success in our endeavors. We may see the hand of the oppressor stayed. We may see justice done. We may see hope prevail. But if we have a great hope, remember that all great hopes were once forlorn hopes that we weren't sure could ever happen, that we were not able to say this is certainly going to be. And the living do know that they will die, and he contrasts this with, on earthly terms, the dead have no more say, and indeed the memory of them is forgotten. That's a hard saying, but it's very true. We remember our ancestors. We remember our mothers, fathers, grandfathers. We've heard stories or perhaps met our great-grandparents and that. But what we do understand is that the farther back you go, the more their ancestors you know nothing about. And you can't name one person from say 500 years ago that you were related to that you would know of them at all. We know very few people from 3,000 years ago, the names named in the Bible, and a few other histories. The memory of them, as Solomon says, is forgotten. So Solomon has a piece of advice. Go eat your bread with joy, verse 7, and drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already approved what you do. Let your garments always be white, let not oil be lacking on your head. Enjoy life with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life that he has given you under the sun, because that is your portion in life, and in your toil at which you toil under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might, for there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol to which you are going. To have an effect in this life is to do things with our might. These words come home to me deeply as I begin to consider that, you know, my age is an age where I can see the end of life coming and approaching. I'm 60. What will I be? Will I live to be 100? It would be a lucky and fortunate thing to live that long, but that's still less than half of the time that I will have been allotted on this earth. One deals at times with the reality of death, and this chapter brings us to the reality of death. God will send he will not suspend his natural rules. We will have misfortune. We will have trouble. We may have sickness, and this is our advice, to enjoy each day as it comes. Now, that's something we know. We know that this is very true. Enjoy each day in its beauty. Enjoy the person, the wife, the people that God has put in your life to love. And so do it with a merry heart. And there is something right now in my life that is just telling me, enjoy each and every day. For this is a great truth. Now, God has an eternal plan for us. He will not abandon his anointed ones, his ones who share in the life of Christ, to the grave. That will not be the entire end. But we have a deep concern and a deep reverence for this life. And so he then points us to say, well, what you have in your hands to do, do it with all your might. If you have works of justice to do, do these with great strength. If you have works of good to do, do these and don't falter. If you have people to support and to protect, set your hand to it and don't stop. There is, even in the face of the fact that we will not have this life forever, and we cling to it desperately, there is in the face of this life the understanding that even though it ends in death, we will do with our might all that we can, because God has put us to do this. This is our task. We know this. Now going on to verse 11, he says, "Again I saw that under the sun the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to the intelligent, nor favor to those with knowledge, but time and chance happen to them all. For man does not know his time, like fish that are taken in an evil net, and like birds that are caught in a snare. So the children of men are snared in an evil time when it suddenly falls upon them." Now these, of course, are some of the most poetic verses in Ecclesiastes to say, you know, the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor the bread to the wise, nor the riches to the intelligent. That time and chance happen to them all. You see this played out. Again, this is a piece of religion that is provable by observing the world around you. And so you also will say, like fish that are caught on a hook, you know, there will come the time when we are pulled from this life and we are there with the hands of God. And it is, and we do see it as an evil time, as a time that we do not look forward to. This will come and we cannot be sure of it. And frankly, we do fear it. But now that we must understand that time and chance do happen to us all. And so what will we do? We will lean that much more on God. The book of Ecclesiastes does not say this, does not say to us, well, you will always, because it doesn't want to give us that business that you will always be happy. You will always just be ecstatic with joy and be able to laugh off every problem in life because you have God. No, there will be the difficulties that come to all, and we will have to deal with those and refer back before to say to ourselves, well, I will enjoy the joys of the day as it comes. I will love the people that God has given me to love, but I will not tell myself that because I have sided myself with God, He will always send me the easiest of times. Verse 13, and then down the end of chapter 9, it says, "I've also seen this example of wisdom under the sun, and it seemed great to me. There was a little city with few men in it, and a great king came against it and besieged it, building great siege works against it. But there was found in it a poor, wise man, and he by his wisdom delivered the city, yet no one remembered that poor man. But I say that wisdom is better than might, though the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. The words of the wise heard in quiet are better than the shouting of a ruler among fools. Wisdom is better than the weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good." Now this tale that Solomon tells, this could also just be a fable to say that there was a king that besieged a city and the city was in great danger, and one poor wise man saved that city, but no one really remembered him. But that was fine because the city was saved. We also will understand that these events like this have happened again and again, that it would be within the purview of the Hebrew memory, the tale of Archimedes that saved the city of Syracuse from attack by his wisdom, by what he was doing. His life was finally taken by a Roman soldier. The city was finally overrun and betrayed, but he did just that. He saved the city by his wisdom. He was not remembered, but again, there's some example of somebody who did what they could with their might, who also plunged in with his own joys and own skills and own appreciation for the day, even for the joy of solving a problem, of bringing about a salvation, without worrying about the glory and the praise, and as Solomon says, the shouting of the fools. The words of the wise, heard in quiet, are better than a shouting of a ruler among fools. This is something that people would know by experience, that the things that are given to us that we truly can work good from, the thoughtful consideration, the looking at the world and understanding how it works, to discerning the good and the proper thing to do, even when the world seems against us, bears a great joy, and bears a happiness. And so now, we, you know, Solomon has concluded this chapter, and it is probably the most downhearted chapter of them all, dealing as it does with the reality of death, with the reality that we cannot be sure that all our plans will come to fruit, that we will come out happy in this life. We may find that we don't have the satisfaction that we wanted, and we will end this life realizing that we have met both frustration and along with our joys, and sometimes if we measure them, could say perhaps more frustrations than joys. But his continual reference to the good, that it is a shame that the good are not honored better than the evil, to his praise for the wise, and that the wise are infinitely better than the fool, still points to that there is a God who judges, who will not, though we go down to the grave, will not leave us there. And so thank you for being with me through Ecclesiastes chapter 9. I know it has not been easy, but I do understand that, you know, we ourselves on this same journey together, trying to find our way in the hands of God and along with each other in community, as we know that our lives will end in death, but we have an eternal hope. So God bless you, and join us again for podcast number 13 as we will go into Ecclesiastes chapter 10. Take care.